Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
My first guest on our final show for the year is a very familiar voice on Open House. In fact, without him, there would have been no Open House. 8 months ago, March 27, he said goodbye to Australia and left these two huge shoes to fill. And I thought, as part of our wrap-up of the year for Open House, it would be totally fitting to check back in with Sheridan Voysey to see how the big move has gone for him and his wife, Merrin, what they're up to and what's ahead. No need to feel too sorry for him, actually, because he's joining us from Paris. Sheridan Voysey, welcome back to Open House.
Lee Hatcher, what a privilege it is to be on your highly influential radio show. When I had the opportunity to come on this show, I just dropped everything I've heard so much about it.
It's got quite a heritage, Sheridan, you know. Now, listen, it'd be cold and dark there at this time of the year in Paris, but also in the lead-up to Christmas. What a lovely part of the world to be.
Oh, it is amazing. We've been wandering around, walking beside the Seine River and visiting Notre Dame Cathedral and the Louvre Museum. Actually, it's funny, we went to the Louvre Museum and everybody was crowded around this little picture of a woman. And this picture is actually behind bulletproof glass and everything. And everybody's crowding around it. It's just this picture of a woman by this guy named Da Vinci or something.
Yes.
It just escapes me
for the moment, but I think there's something familiar there. So how long are you there? Is this a holiday for you guys?
It is, yes, that's right. I mean, it sounds oh so exotic, but remember, when you're in the UK, you basically take a bus into London and a train out of London anywhere, and that train can take you in a couple of hours to Paris. So, yeah, it's actually Merrin's and my 15th wedding anniversary this week. And so, well, what a way to celebrate.
Happy anniversary.
In the city of love.
Yeah, great
Thank
stuff.
You.
So you guys have been living in Oxford.
Yes.
Paint us a picture of what life's like there for you two.
One of the great poets called it, you know, the city of the dreamy spires. You know, it is an amazing little city. It's a city of, 140,000, 150,000 people, and yet it's still got the feel of a village. And, of course, it centres around Oxford University. And, funnily enough, when people walk through Oxford, often they'll say, well, where's the university? The university is everywhere. It's not one building like you might have in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Adelaide. There are little colleges everywhere throughout Oxford, but you have these amazing thousand-year-old buildings, and, you know, we're just up the road from Christchurch Cathedral with its famous choir, and John Wesley studied here, and, of course, C.S. Lewis and J.R. Tolkien used to run around Oxford and have their little chats with the Inklings at the Eagle and Child pub, and so, of course, Lee, I've had to go there a couple of times and just sit in Lewis's seat and try and imbibe some of the aura there.
Yeah.
It's an amazing treat.
It's the cliche question, but have you missed home much?
Well, we have and we haven't. Yeah. On the one hand, as you mentioned, actually, funny, when you mentioned it's 8 months, I had to stop it. It's 8 months already. Flown so quickly that there's, I guess we're still getting used to our little, three-bedroom flat that we've got in Oxford. We're still getting used to it actually being away from home. But there's no doubt I miss the blue skies. There's plenty of grey skies in the UK. There's plenty of beauty too, but there's a lot of grey skies and a bit of rain at the moment. But, you know, missing family, missing friends. We left a really good church. We left a really, really good home group that we were a part of. Missing all of those close connections. But still in the honeymoon phase of being this amazing new city with this amazing country and, you know, learning and absorbing all of the good things that it still has.
Yes. What's church life like there for you guys?
Well, Oxford is very good in that regard. You know, again, when you think about it, it's not a huge city, 150,000 people, and yet it has a lot of very, very vibrant churches. I mean, there's St. Aldate's Church, St. Aldate's Anglican Church, just up the road, which is, of course, world-renowned. Canon Michael Green was there, who wrote a number of books. A lot of our listeners will know of his work. There's another large church called Oxford Community Church, a lot of very dynamic, medium-sized sized churches. It's just spiritually a lot of things are happening in Oxford. It's really, really good, which is great because, of course, it's very much as a city of ideas. It's an intellectual city,
yes.
And it's nice to make sure that there's a good, strong spiritual presence. On the whole, the UK, it would not be, earth-shattering to say that the UK struggles in faith in terms of growing secularism and, a coldness when it comes to faith matters. Not so much as compared to here in France, which is perhaps maybe the most secular country around, but certainly there's some good things happening, but there's a lot more to be done over in the UK.
Yes. So tell us, give us a sketch about what you two have been up to since you've moved there 6, 7, 8 months ago.
Yes. It has been a wonderful move for my wife, Meryn. As I mentioned when I left on the 27th, reminded me, this was a really good move for my wife. It was time for her to have a new beginning, if you like.
Yes.
And this was an opportunity for her to work at Oxford University, and she's fallen into a wonderful job with great people that she's working with, doing some really good work. And so that has been fantastic. I've had this opportunity of then having a writing sabbatical to be able to finish one long-term book project that I've had for a few years running, and a little radio show kept on getting in the way of me finishing it.
I get that.
I bet you do. Especially 8 months down the track, you know what it's like
yeah.
now. But it was, it's been a real gift to be able to just have this time focused writing. I'm in conversation with a few radio networks over here and some other things going on. And we'll see what happens with that. For the time being, it's just a real joy to be able to just focus on this next book project, which is going to follow the one I think we'll talk about in just a second.
Yes.
And then maybe even another one that kind of came out of the blue. So that's what I've been just sitting in my office, tapping away, typing away, researching away. And Meryn's been either riding her bike, because of course it's Oxford.
Yes.
And so everybody has bicycles. It's faster to get around the city on a bicycle. So we're getting really, really fit. So she jumps on her bicycle and she heads off to the university and does her work. And we then walk along the river and walk along the River Thames, and we watch the canal boats and we watch the rowers, and it's all very quaintly.
My heart's going out to you both. What a terrible life. Now, so tell us about your updated book, Unseen Footprints. I wanted to give that a plug. Tell us what that development's been about.
Yes, well, it's a real joy, and as an author you'd know this as well, Lee. It's just a real joy when your first book stays in print. It's just a gift. So Unseen Footprints, Encountering the Divine Along the Journey of Life is its subtitle. I released it in late 2005. In 2006, it won the Australian Christian Book of the Year Award. In fact, your book actually came
third.
Got an award around
yes.
about that time.
Yeah, same year.
That year, same year. Oh,
what good company!
I'm sorry about that.
That's right.
it was a jolly good year that year.
It was really a great year for Christian writing.
It was. So Unseen Footprints then came out in the UK and the US in 2007. It got re-released in 2008. Now, this is a brand new edition, so new chapters and a whole series of spiritual exercises that go for each chapter, plus an ebook version and an audiobook version. So it's all very exciting, and I'm just very grateful that it's out there in a brand new way.
Yes. You explore the four longings of the human heart for people not familiar with the book. Take us through those, each of those, Sheridan.
Yeah, well, the basic idea behind Unseen Footprints is that God is walking in and amongst our lives, often without us even realizing it. So, just imagine if God's unseen footprints are kind of walking before you, behind you, beside you. How do you discern those footprints? And as part of the book, I tell my own story of coming to faith, basically, and what you can expect as far as part of that journey for a lot of people, what it looks like when it comes to, going on a spiritual journey and finding faith. I wasn't born into a Christian home. I was born into a spiritually active home. That's a very complex story, but I wasn't born into a church going home. I became a Christian at the age of 19, and this is kind of part of my story. But part of that is recognizing that human beings do have a set of yearnings or longings. And I bring them down to four main yearnings: a yearning for purpose, a yearning for guidance, for liberation, and for belonging. Purpose, we all have this question, what am I here for? Why am I here? Yes. That's the little question that goes around in your mind when you're lying in bed at night and you're kind of asking the so what question, you know, so what about the holiday, and so what about the pay rise, and so what about the promotion? So what? What is life all about? Yes. We all have these longings to answer those kinds of questions for us personally. We have a longing for guidance. Soren Kierkegaard once said, life is only to be understood backwards, but must be understood and must be lived forwards. And that's the dilemma, is that you can only really understand your life when you look back at it, but you have to live it forward. So how do we make decisions? How do we decide which step to take next? And that's where we have this longing for guidance. Now, some people seek that through tarot cards. Some people seek that through women's magazines. Some people seek that through God. We all have a longing, though, to have a sense of guidance in our lives. Liberation, we all want to be freed from either pain that we've experienced or abuse that we've encountered or the ramifications of the unwise choices we've made. Boy, open up a newspaper and you'll find that we have this longing for liberation.
Yes.
And belonging. We all have this longing to belong somewhere and to someone. Mother Teresa said the biggest disease today is not leprosy or tuberculosis, but rather the feeling of being unwanted, uncared for, and deserted by everybody. So those are the four yearnings that I explore, and my premise is that they are there for a reason. Speaking of Oxford, C.S. Lewis, of course, was living there, and one of the great things he said is that desires do not exist without a satisfaction for them. If you feel hungry, that is because there is such a thing called food. A little turtle wants to go and swim out in the water. Well, there is such a thing called the sea. And so if we find ourselves with these yearnings, these spiritual yearnings, well, there's a hint that actually a spiritual fulfillment to those yearnings actually exists.
Yes, indeed. You also explore the experience of doubt and its benefit to faith. I asked Nicky Gumbel earlier this year, when I had the great privilege of speaking to him about that, if he ever doubted. And he shot straight back. Of course, he said, without doubt there'd be no faith. Is that doubt an experience you know personally as well?
Yes, it is.
Notwithstanding the profile, you know, and the responsibility of hosting a program like Open House.
Well, there's two ways to answer your question. I mean, there's those little doubts that happen along the way. When you come along something, you go, oh, well, what does that mean for what I've always believed?
Yes.
Now, I think hosting a show like Open House, it puts you in the prime position to have numerous little doubts every week. In fact, I've said this to other people when they've interviewed me about hosting a show like Open House, was, you know, did you ever doubt your faith? Little doubts. Well, if somebody brings up a really good argument against faith, I can either be closed-minded about that and not even entertain it, or explore it and go, okay, well, what does this mean?
What do I do with it?
What do I do with it? Now, I've found that actually all those little doubts have tended to then been resolved. But then, of course, there's the other bigger response to your question, which is the big doubt. And I went through an experience of doubting whether there was a God, whether there was such a basis for faith. Funnily enough, when I went to Bible college, I had become a Christian. 3 years of just having this really warm, glowing relationship with God, felt this real call and direction to go, number one, get into Christian radio, which, by the way, back then in the early 90s was a very small endeavor indeed.
Yes.
And secondly, to go to Bible college to learn about the Bible and to get prepared for Christian service. Well, a really good Bible college will expose you to a variety of viewpoints, not just one or two, and often ones that are, you know, holus bolus, completely wrong. But if you're going to have an open heart, then sometimes that's going to be difficult. And there was a period of time, about 3 or 4 months, while I was at Bible college of all places, where I went through a severe time of doubt, just thinking, well, these theologians, one says this, one says that, all these academics, one says that Jesus did rise from the dead, one says, oh no, that's just metaphorical, one said only a certain amount of people are going to get to heaven, another person said everybody's going to get to heaven because God's so generous. Wrestling with all of those things when you're a fairly new Christian, it was tough, and there was a part of me that said, well, if these guys can't work it out, how am I going to? Is this just a load of rubbish?
Yeah.
So, yes, I have gone through that experience personally, and I tell the story in Unseen Footprints of sitting by the Brisbane River, where all good things begin, because that's actually where the dream of Open House began.
I remember.
15 years ago, yes. But one Saturday evening, after going through all this doubt and taking to that little place called South Bank in Brisbane, by the Brisbane River. I was living in Brisbane, obviously, at the time. I took a notepad. I took my capless ballpoint pen. Remember, I couldn't even afford a brand new pen. I had a Bible with me, and I took a chocolate strawberry milkshake. Very significant detail, because chocolate strawberry milkshakes were always the kind that I got when I was feeling low. And I took it to the Brisbane River this night. I remember thinking, okay, I've got to make a decision. Something's got to happen. Otherwise, what am I going to do? I can't keep on going to Bible college if I don't even believe there's a God anymore. Long story short, there was a very special experience that happened that night where I opened the Bible at random, and it opened to Psalm 77. Now, if anybody knows that psalm, they'll know that it's written by a guy named Asaph, who is kind of the worship leader of Israel, kind of the Darlene Check of Israel, if you want to put it like that. And he is going through his dark night of the soul, and he is asking these questions. Where are you, God? Why are you so distant from me? Are you even there? Now, I've got to say, Lee, for a young, 22-year-old, going through deep doubt, reading these words in the Bible, and I just randomly opened up to them, it felt as if there was this warm hand on my back, you know, guiding me along.
You're not alone.
I wasn't alone. Somebody in the past had gone through this, and God had seen fit to include this story in the Bible. And it, as a result of that whole experience, and it's a much larger story than that, but I remember getting up after 2 or 3 hours in that park very late at night now, and the moths were flying around the lights and everything, and thinking, there is a God, and I'm serving him.
Yeah. Mm. Any other projects on the boil for the coming year?
Yes, well, thank you for asking that, and I'll try and give you a less convoluted answer as I possibly can. When I left the show at the beginning of the year, I talked about, you know, this great unfinished business of my life was this long-term book project, which is tentatively called More Than This. And the whole idea is that we are religious beings, even if we don't recognize it, and that, you know, God is actually trying to get our attention along the way.
Yes.
So I've been working on that the last few months. Now, I went away for a weekend. Merrin and I went away for a weekend with a fairly well-known Christian writer and his wife. It was a very lovely invitation from them, and we had this lovely weekend away. And as a result of that weekend, I don't know if I quite heard a whisper from God. We'll see. But it seemed as if maybe I should be starting to work on another project, another book project, which is a little bit of a memoir. The full story as to why I left Open House hasn't come out yet. And there's no scandal there, don't worry, there's nothing bad.
No.
But there certainly is quite a story, quite a long story, actually. And after, I guess, expressing it to this couple over the weekend, this, you know, wonderfully seasoned writer kept on saying to me, have you written about this? Have you thought about writing about this? You really should think about writing this.
Mm.
And so that's been the next thing to pray about, and that might well be a project that starts taking a bit of my time.
More personal one than your books in the past.
Yes, this would be very much a memoir, I guess, of broken dreams, and to some degree.
I want the interview when that happens. We want the interview.
Somebody of your caliber and a show of this quality.
No holds barred.
You're the first one. First cab off the rank.
No holds barred, Sheridan Voysey.
Right.
Tell me this. What's open house deprivation syndrome like? What's that been like over these last few months? I mean, I'm sure there are good things about it, and I'm sure there are tough things about it, actually.
Well, there's definitely been such a syndrome, and my wife would be quick to confirm that. You know, as we've talked about before, Open House was a decade-long dream, and it was just wonderful to ride that dream for 5 years. It wasn't my initial plan to leave it after 5 years. That's just the way things have worked out. Mm. And there are times where I just think, and you know it, Lieb, and you know it not just from Open House, you know it from Sky, you know it from your years of radio and hosting talkback shows in the past, those magic nights when you just have this wonderful show, you have great guests on and some wonderful things are said, you have great callers, all these listeners who come in and they call in with their own views and their own thoughts, and you just... It's like you hear the voice of God, you know, just some wonderful things. I miss that.
Yes.
There were times on Open House where I know that people were coming away from the show going, wow, my life has been changed. Something profound just happened. Yeah. I just heard something that I really need to take on board. You can't replace that with anything.
Yeah.
So I definitely miss that.
Yeah.
I don't miss the headaches on a Monday morning. It's funny because after all of these years of doing late night radio, I'm actually not a late night person at all. I'm actually a morning person, and I was often absolutely written off on a Monday. So
yeah.
I'm kind of glad to have my Mondays back.
My Monday for Sky starts at 4 a.m. when I wake up after going to bed about 12:45, but I don't complain about that. Yeah, I get that. But I suppose it also opens up just a bit of freedom and a bit of space for you as well.
Oh, it does. And again, this season of writing, I mean,
yes.
What a gift. It really is a gift. And we're in a position for the next little while that I can continue to do that for a bit. And so, you know, it's one of those things where it's both a challenge and there's certainly a sense of grief about not sitting in the chair that you're sitting in now.
Yeah.
And there's also a sense of a real gift that here I can, you know, I can get up every morning and I can spend a full day writing, researching. I'm almost doing, you know, like a PhD. I'm hoping somebody's going to give me an honorary doctorate after writing these books, Lee.
The more you sit in that C.S. Lewis seat, the better you'll get, I reckon.
I hope it just absorbs into me. I really do.
Totally. Do you think the move to the UK has been a long-term move now that you've been there for these few months? Are we talking about a medium to long-term proposition here?
The whole idea that when Merrin and I were talking about doing this move, you know, moving countries, the whole idea was, well, this won't just be for a year because it's just too hard. Anybody who's done that move knows that you either do it completely or not at all, unless you're single and you can just kind of pack a few bags and you know, head over and you can do a bit of a working holiday. Yeah, that's possible. But we decided to go the other way and say, look, we're going to treat this as if it's at least a medium-term venture. We'll see. Look, we're just coming up to our first real winter. And,
my
you
sympathies.
Know, a winter in the UK, that's, you know, the call of God can always be challenged by a really solid winter in the UK, I think.
Yeah.
So we'll find out whether we can really hack it here. It's already getting pretty cold. We've already started wearing the thermals.
Totally.
If we can survive that, then we might be here for another few years. But certainly we'll be visiting back in Oz, certainly next year.
Okay.
And we won't be too far away.
Good
but for the time being, we're looking at making Oxford, Oxford home.
So what's the move from Australia, Sheridan, to where you are, done for your faith? How would you reflect back on that? Packing up
and
leaving.
Good question. Yeah. Boy, you're good at this, Lee. give the man the job.
I get lots of practice.
It has been, I'd say it really has been a leap of faith. And I don't say that in the sense of, oh, look at me. Aren't I wonderful? I'm such a faithful Christian. I've made this great big leap of faith. No, there is a sense. I spoke in my church before we left. In fact, it was the very Sunday morning before announcing my departure on Open House from memory. And I remember speaking about this whole idea of taking a leap of faith. There's a little animal called the African impala. Fascinating animal. It can actually leap to a height of about 3 meters. It can leap a distance in any one kind of fell swoop of about 11 meters, and yet it can be held in any enclosure, in any zoo, anywhere around the world, with a wall of just a meter. And you think, well, why? I mean, it could just jump out of that enclosure. But the reason is, it's such a small animal, it can't see over the fence. And if it can't see where its feet will land, it won't leap. I think there's a metaphor in that when it comes to the whole leap of faith, is that I'm like the African impala. I don't really want to jump until I can see where my feet are going to land on the other side. And yet, of course, that's no leap of faith at all. This UK move has been something of that for me. And so I'm still in free fall, if you like. There's still a sense of which I'm still on the way down, not quite sure where the feet are going to land. Look, there's these book projects that are happening, and yes, I know that there's some publishers that are interested in them, but we've got no signatures on contracts. And I've, you know, plenty of authors have had signatures on contracts before, and even those signed contracts get ripped up. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know whether I've left radio for good. I don't know whether a whole heap of things that I'd like to see happen will happen. And I guess that's the risky nature of this season.
Yeah.
And so I'm learning again what it means to walk by faith, literally.
Totally.
I'm no great model in this, but that's the great lesson I think that God has for me personally in this this current season, walking by faith, letting him guide my feet down to a safe place.
It's a great perspective to take into 2012, I think, both for you and me and for the rest of the Open House audience. Sheridan Voysey, I'm so glad you've joined us on the last program for 2011. I've often reflected on the absolute genius under God of the life, faith and culture thing at Open House. So well done to you, and it's great to talk tonight.
Oh, it's great to talk to you, Lee, and I just keep on hearing great things about what you and the team have been doing with the show, and again, just so glad that it went to somebody like you who actually had brought all this experience and this faithful heart to the role.
Good. So
God bless you too in a brand new year.
Same to you and to Merrin, and enjoy Paris. I'm terribly envious.
Thank you.
Good on you. Sheridan Voysey, thank you so much.
Great to talk, mate.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.